I call this meeting of House Finance to order, House Finance Committee. Let the record reflect that it is 1:34 p.m. on February 2nd, 2023. Present today is Representative Glom, Representative Ortiz, Representative Kronk, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Staff, Co-Chair Edgman, Co-Chair Foster, and myself, Co-Chair Johnson. Today we are receiving a presentation from the Office of Management and Budget, an overview of the Governor's FY23 supplemental budget request. Presenting today, we have Neil Steininger, Director of the OMB. Director Steininger, would you please come forward, introduce anyone you have accompanying you, and put yourself on the record.
Thank you. For the record, Neil Steininger, Office of Management and Budget. And today I'm going over the Governor's supplemental budget, HB 54. We do have folks on the line from most of the agencies if there are detailed questions about the given budget items. So in summary, the overall amount of supplementals is about $105 million in unrestricted general funds and $393 million in all funds, $203 million of that being federal funds, $32 million in designated general funds, and about $52 million in other fund sources. So supplementals, just kind of by way of explanation, a supplemental budget is for the current fiscal year that we're operating under, so fiscal year 23. We're a little bit over two quarters of the way through the fiscal year, and after the two quarters end, we work with agencies to look at the spending trends, as well as any unforeseen events that have happened to the agency in the delivery of their mission, to understand if there's a need for additional resources or if there's some other event that's happened that requires an additional appropriation or an amendment to an existing appropriation by the legislature. There are also supplementals that are a little bit more of technical items, things that aren't really arising from necessarily a projected over expenditure or anything of that sort, but they may be things like a federal grant that came in mid-year, requiring additional federal authority to expend from, or other things where we're just changing the scope of an appropriation or making a reappropriation that might just require a supplemental effective date to the appropriation, but isn't necessarily something to do with an agency's operations. With this total amount of unrestricted general fund, as the committee recalls, in my presentation on the overall operating budget, we had included a placeholder of $85 million. You can see this is about $20 million greater than that placeholder. So as a result, that adjusts the amount of K-12 forward funding from the surplus in 23 down to roughly $29 million. So that $29 million represents effectively the total surplus between projected FY23 expenditures and projected FY23 revenues. So at that level of surplus, for the remainder of the year, we need to average $82.39 in price per barrel of oil in order to balance the fiscal year 23 budget at the current level of appropriations.
Thank you. And we have a question, Representative Ortiz.
Madam Chair, through the Chair, appreciate that. Mr. Steininger, remind me, what is the forecasted price? Or is it supposed to be right around that $82.39, or is that a little bit ambitious, $82.39?
Through the Chair, Representative Ortiz, I believe the forecasted price was around $81 or $82 for the entirety of 23. However, what I will say is the beginning of 23, the first half of the year, did better than that. And so, that lower price level, we're in a better position than initially was projected at fall. Say the price of oil between the fall forecast and today has been a little bit better, and that adjusting impacts this number here.
Okay. Just a quick follow-up.
Yep, follow-up.
And so what you're saying is We originally left last, before the session ended last year, hoping to put $1.2 billion to forward funding for education. Now that number is down to $29.2 million. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, yes. At the end of last session, when the governor signed the budget, we were projecting between the forward funding and deposit into the CBR roughly $2 billion, roughly speaking, and that number is now $29
billion. Thank you.
All right, thank you. What was the number again? I thought it was $88.
Co-Chair Johnson, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm speaking from memory, which is always dangerous, so I might have that number wrong. It might have been 88, and I'll get back to the committee with the exact number.
Yeah. And so before we continue on, does anyone else have any other questions? All right. All right, can carry on.
On slide three, I have a couple slides to highlight some significant supplementals that we're discussing today, and then slides that give more general information on the other agencies. So one significant supplemental in the governor's bill is $50 million for the cost of fire suppression. So this chart that you're looking at here shows in yellow actual expenditures on fire suppression activity in the state from 2016 through 2022. Then in the green is the base budget appropriated initially by the legislature, and the blue are the supplemental appropriations made by the legislature in each of these years. Projecting fire suppression costs is fairly challenging. You can see that, you know, the base budgets for fire suppression are significantly less than we actually incur in a given year. In 2020, we increased that base budget to be roughly equal to the amount in fiscal year 18, looking at that as a mechanism to bring the base budget to, roughly speaking, what we think the low of a fire suppression year is. And then requesting supplementals when we have fire suppression years going much higher.
And we have Representative Kronk and then Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Through the chair. So and I'm just looking back. So I'm assuming that we have a supplemental every year pretty much for the fire budget just because it's so unpredictable.
Through the chair, Representative Kronk, yes. On this chart, you can see three exceptions here. Fiscal year 16, 18, and 21, where there were no supplementals. So one strategy we use for fire suppression in some years is to use what are called ratifications. And so this is basically where you spend money that hasn't been appropriated by the legislature. Now, obviously, that is, you know, not a tactic we like to use at the Office of Management and Budget, or, you know, I don't believe this body really prefers that as well. But when you look at some of these years, say fiscal year 19 or fiscal year 22, we had a projected supplemental. We requested that supplemental. When the legislature adjourned, we had additional fires on state lands requiring us to continue to spend money. You know, the option, the choice there is either to allow the Department of Natural Resources to spend money on fire suppression or to bring the legislature back for a special session for an additional appropriation. And so generally speaking, this is happening, you know, in the June timeframe, May, June timeframe at the end of the year. And, you know, just for kind of the practical purposes, it doesn't necessarily make as much sense to come back for a supplemental. So we have a process where we send letters to the presiding officers of both bodies, informing them that we are about to hit the limit of the appropriation that we have, provide additional information on the fire itself, on the acreage, on the cost, and then we use that as kind of tacit permission to continue spending. And so that's where you see these yellow bars being greater than the appropriation. That's what's been happening in each of those years.
Thank you.
Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Director Seininger. So regarding the $50 million in supplemental for the fire suppression activity, so looking at the 2022 actuals, considering inflationary pressure, high fuel costs, and I don't know if the fire season was worse, in my opinion, than the previous year. I remember flying to Galena and seeing a ton of wildfires everywhere on my way back. So my question is, What is the confidence level in this number at 50 million, or do we expect it might be higher given those factors?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, that's a good question because, generally speaking, I would say the confidence level in the appropriations we put forward for fire suppression is probably one of the lower levels of confidence, as this graph illustrates pretty well in terms of what the actual expenditure will be. And there's a couple of reasons for that. You know, one being, of course, that fires are fairly unpredictable in terms of what the weather will be, the snow load, the rain conditions, you know, the how dry the forest is effectively come spring. We also have another piece that's kind of hard to predict, and that's whether or not the fire will be on state land or federal land. And so when the fire is on state land, the state picks up that cost. When the fire is on federal land, the feds pick up that cost. And the distribution of, you know, acreage that's on federal land versus state land is something that we generally don't know at this time period. And it's actually something we end up negotiating with the federal government for years to come after the close of the fire season. And, you know, I might be now getting to the point where I'm at the limit of my knowledge on this, but we do have Norm McDonald from the Division of Forestry, you know, if we do want to continue going down more detailed questions on this.
Just a quick
follow-up, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, quick follow-up. So I guess, you know, not to kind of hammer the point in, just the $50 million, that's what we think thus far, Director, or is there potential for, like, large growth in that, or are we pretty close to the potential number? I realize it's hard to crystal ball it, like you said, so just curious.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, so the $50 million is covering, we know there were fires at the close of last summer that exceeded the initial appropriation. We are working with the department to put together estimates for what may come in spring fires. And so if through those estimates and through looking back at those fires, you know, from the fall and looking at kind of the acreage of federal versus state lands, whether this $50 million is going to be enough to get all the way through the year, you know, we may have to come forward and, you know, provide a better, clearer estimate later on in session. At this stage, you know, this is kind of the best information that I have.
Yeah. Thanks, Director.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, Mr. Steiniger, you started to go there. So I want to go back to that issue of the federal reimbursements for state costs that summer of 2019, where it was the state was on fire all summer. When that, and I know that starting in FY20, we had a huge supplemental for that and big discussion. I was on the Resources Committee about the federal reimbursement. Where does that end up showing? And OMB at the time said it takes actually a couple of years for that return to us. Does that ever show here as part of that supplemental and payout, or how is it accounted for us to see that we got back, you know, the millions that the feds owed us, even if it's 2 years delayed in the fiscal cycle? And I'm sure it's an accounting nightmare. But where are we on getting back the money that feds owe us for fire season 19, which was fiscal year 2020.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, you know, it would show up as a deposit back into the general fund to reimburse us for state dollars that went to spend. In terms of where that reimbursement is, I actually might ask if I could defer that question to Norm McDonald at the Division of Forestry, or if there's somebody better from DNR, he might be able to direct and give a more direct answer to that specific reimbursement.
Mr. McDonald, are you online? And did you hear the question?
I did hear the question. And for the record, my name is Norm McDonald. I'm the Chief of Fire and Aviation for the Department of Natural Resources, the Division of Forestry and Fire Protection. I don't have exact numbers on what has been recovered from the 2019 fire season. I can tell you it is not completely recovered yet. That process is still ongoing. We recover most of that in about 2 years, but there are parts of that that happen through negotiations and the cross-billing process that can take up to 5 years. And that includes the federal cross-billing for federal lands and state protection, where they reimburse us for those efforts. And then also for the FEMA, which is called the FMEG process, where for some of our fires we get reimbursed through FEMA. Both of those processes are still ongoing, and usually, like I said, take between 2 to 3 years to complete.
One follow up.
Follow up, Rep. Hannon.
Thank you. Follow up through the chair, Mr. McDonald. My recollection, and I'm working from memory, and as Mr. Steiner said, that's never good, but something in the magnitude of approaching like $100 million of our fire bill that year was going to be federal returned to us. And I'm wondering if that's right, and I'll turn to Mr. Steiniger, but that would never show that if this entire blue bar of supplemental from FY20 was actually federal receipts, we'd still see it as a supplemental, even though we've gotten federal monies to offset that, but it's not going to show ever in our budget. But if Mr. McDonald recollects, I think that 19, that it was approaching $100 million in federal money owed to us for it.
Mr. McDonald?
And through the chair, Representative Hannon, I'm sorry. Yeah, through the chair, Representative Hannon. Yeah, that's correct. 2019 was a record year for the federal reimbursement process. If you remember that year, we had the Swan Lake fire, which was down in the Kenai. That fire alone was about a $50 million fire, all in state protection. So that fire alone really drove those costs. I will say that varies year to year based on where the fires are located. In 2019, many of our fires were in federal jurisdiction, in state protection, where we were reimbursed for. In fire season 2022, which covers FY22 and 23, most of our fires in both state and federal protection were in state jurisdiction, which means we are liable for those costs. So that really varies season to season, year to year, and that's again that's another hard one to predict.
Thank you.
All right, seeing no additional questions, carry on.
On slide 4 is a graph related to our Department of Corrections. So the Department of Corrections in fiscal year 23 has a just shy of $19 million unrestricted general fund supplemental. We also have about $2.1 million in federal funds for a total of $21.3 million. You can see represented here in the blue on the graph. One thing to note on the Department of Corrections, kind of as you look at this graph, there have been quite a few years where they've had significant supplementals. It's always for slightly different reasons. In some years, we have shortfalls in inmate medical. In recent years, we've been seeing kind of savings in inmate medical that we've been able to shift over to cover the costs of population management, which includes both those that are in the institutions and those that are out on electronic monitoring or those in community residential centers. This supplemental for $21.3 million is kind of spread across those three areas of population management as a result of having to pay for overtime, the increased amount of population in the facilities, as well as the increases in the number of people out on electronic monitoring or living in community residential centers. There's also a capital supplemental for the Department of Corrections for the Lemon Creek Correctional Center. Due to erosion issues underneath that facility, there were major structural damage caused over this summer during the heavy rains that Juneau experienced. And as a result, the department has had to move inmates out of that center, redistribute them around the correctional system. And there's a requirement for about $10 million in capital improvements to repair that correctional center and bring it back into operational condition. Moving to slide 5 in the Department of Public Safety, we have a number of supplemental needs. So to kind of explain a bit of the story in the Department of Public Safety, in fiscal year 22, we actually have a ratification of expenditures. So this is a closed fiscal year where the expenditures exceeded the amount appropriated in the Alaska State Trooper or in the the trooper detachment's RDU or appropriation in the department. There's kind of two components to this. One is a shortfall of $3.3 million in costs associated with personal services in the department, so payment of payroll for trooper positions and other support staff. But then also $3 million of costs that were not paid. These are costs associated with depreciation on the vehicles that the troopers drive. So as we were working with the Department of Public Safety at the close of fiscal year 22, after the legislature had adjourned and finished the supplemental process, we found some of these issues here with costs that were on the books that couldn't be accommodated under the appropriation. And so we chose to forego payment into the depreciation of their vehicles in order to make ends meet within the fiscal year 22 appropriation. When we look at fiscal year 23, the year that we're in now, we have kind of three components of the supplemental need in the Department of Public Safety. One is a portion of expenditures shifted from fiscal year 22 into 23. Another is a portion associated with the depreciation of those vehicles, to ensure that the department's able to pay that depreciation in 23 and forward. And then the other is for the other cost pressures associated with the shortfall in fiscal year 22 that are still present here in fiscal year 23. Some of those are travel, including the cost of moving a trooper into a rural station, as well as equipment costs, and the costs associated with trooper positions that were granted to the department through the legislative process, but not fully funded in the appropriation process. And so as the department has filled those positions, we need to provide an appropriation to fully fund the cost of their payroll.
So I have a question on the $3.3 million. Does that mean that we filled all of our, that's personnel? We filled all of our trooper, I mean, have we filled all of our trooper positions, or is that overtime, or is that money? Is that, I mean, I guess I'm trying to figure out how we use all our personnel if we haven't filled all the positions quite yet.
Chair Johnson, there's a combination of filling some of the positions that were vacant and that had been vacant and added but not necessarily fully funded. Then there's also overtime for the positions that we do have. Not all of the positions were filled in fiscal year 22, but in order to, you know, provide the service to the public, a lot of the positions were, you know, booking overtime. There's also an additional cost in that year related to the move of troopers into rural areas. That also was occurring in fiscal year 22, but not every trooper position was filled in that year.
Okay. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Steininger, on this slide, these things sort of have the appearance of items that while worthy supplementals, might be baked into a base budget in FY24. Can we expect to see that in the FY24 budget?
They just don't look like one-offs to me.
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Josephson. They certainly are not one. You know, the cost of depreciation on vehicles for the department, you know, while we skipped payment of that cost in fiscal year 22, that is not a practice that is, you know, durable in the long term. So that is certainly an ongoing cost that has to be, you know, addressed in the fiscal year 24 and forward budget. We've included some of that in our initial budget proposal in December 15th. You know, several of those costs were addressed there. However, working with the department to understand the spending trends in 23, you know, through the supplemental process is informing, you know, what we'll be able to put into an amended budget to ensure that, you know, this problem is not there in 24.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, Director, I'm wondering if there were some lessons learned in this particular area when I think about public safety being the most important piece of the work that we support here, and knowing that there are holes and that we're filling the holes with trooper work in overtime. I think about the slide I saw last week with all of the vacancies, and in some cases it's just the nature of the beast. With something like this, it seems like if we were to be able to project and do whatever needs to be done, I know that there's some work around in other bills to help make sure that we can recruit and retain. But I just think about whether or not there were some lessons learned that if we were to increase wages or do something that was more attractive for these folks, that we would save money in the long run as opposed to these overcosts that that we end up having to pay for in the short run. And also we end up with a lot of troopers who are on a lot of overtime and tired. I just wondered if you had any comment to that.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, certainly. And that's when you look at some of the strategies used by the administration, you know, we've, you know, pretty aggressively worked on recruitment down south for troopers, and also, you know, have been utilizing things like hiring bonuses for the trooper positions to try and attract people in, as well as addressing the base wage through our negotiations with the trooper bargaining unit. So we have been trying to go down most of those roads as a way to address that recruitment issue the department is facing. And we've seen successes in that. We've seen larger trooper academies. And so, you know, we're optimistic that we'll be able to fill these positions and have, you know, actual troopers and not troopers working overtime and getting burnt out.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, to Director Steininger. So just to kind of dial back to Co-Chair Johnson's point regarding the personnel service cost of $3.3 million, it was my understanding that this department had a vacancy rate that was above the budgeted vacancy factor. And I could be wrong, but in my mind that effectively nets some form of salary savings. Because the positions are not filled. It's true that not all positions are budgeted for, but that's the purpose behind the vacancy factor. So this $3.3 million is in addition to potential money that we should have still laying around for not being able to fill the positions through salary savings. Is that correct, or am I wrong?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, the $3.3 million is after having consumed any of the money that, you know, would have been available due to vacancy. So, you know, the amount budgeted for personal services was, you know, X dollars, and you have less positions filled. There's that gap in money from what the, you know, vacancy factor that we take, you know, take out of that budget. That was first spent, and then $3.3 million in addition to that was spent as a result of overtime and other factors. And we do have a representative of the department, Director Halloran, if, you know, you want some more information on kind of where that expenditure went. Oh, she's in the room.
Did that answer your question, or do you want me to look for the, I don't know who it is, it's online.
But it's fine. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Director.
All right. All right, if we could, just we'll try to keep this moving. Thanks.
All right, on slide six, the rest of these aren't necessarily as large of supplemental items or as challenging of issues as, you know, the previous couple. However, I'll go through these, and if there's questions on any individual item, I'm happy to answer. So in Department of Administration, we have an increase in program receipts. This is program receipts collected by the Office of Administrative Hearings for hearings that they conduct on behalf of municipalities. They're seeing an increase in those hearings, so they need the authority to collect that revenue. We have an issue here with fiscal year 22 lease payments that the department in paying those leases to the Department of Transportation, simply didn't get the accounting transaction entered by the end of the fiscal year due to turnover in accounting staff, as well as a shift of leasing from Department of Administration to the Department of Transportation. So what ended up happening is we had to pay 2 years' worth of lease out of the fiscal year 23 budget. This transaction would make them whole. This money did lapse back into the general fund at the close of fiscal year 22 because the accounting transaction didn't post. So it's no additional outlay to the Treasury from what was planned, simply a timing shift of the cost. The department also had to relocate a network room in the Gold Belt building. They had been sharing space with the Department of Education for their server racks, but the Department of Education vacated that space and moved to the state office building. As a result, the Division of Payroll had to move their network equipment at a cost of $100,000 that was not accounted for within their planned budget. We have a number of these last three here in Department Administration. These are associated with fiscal notes from the previous session. In the case of SB 131, the fiscal note had the incorrect funding, the final version that was attached to the appropriation bill. This corrects that omission or error. And then in the case of HB 325, these fiscal notes were associated with, I believe it was SB 5 last session, which did not pass but was merged into HB 325 in the final days of session. When that merger happened, the fiscal notes from the old bill did not get attached to the new bill. And as a result, this issue for the Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender Agency were not addressed in the funding in the bill. And so this makes them whole for the cost of that policy change implemented last year. In Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, we have another fiscal note that was missed in the appropriation process last year for HB 226 for COLA for some exempt employees within the Department of Commerce. There are a couple of health insurance rate changes that were also missed in the appropriation bill last year. And there is one more technical item related to extending the lapse date of an appropriation for the Alaska Reinsurance Program. As that program had a five-year time horizon, it's been re-upped for another 5 years, and so this appropriation will now be extended into the future.
Must have been the HB5.
HB5. Is it HB5? Yes. Thank you. On slide 7 in the Department of Education, the Alaska Arts Council has received an additional grant from the National Endowment for the Arts and needs an additional $125,000 in federal authority. The Department of Education has also seen an increase in the cost of administrative hearings and legal services within the Professional Teaching Practices Commission and requires $105,000 in UGF to pay for those costs. The Washington, Wyoming, Alaska, Montana, Idaho, or WAMI program, this is the program that pays for tuition for doctors to come back into the state, had a contractual increase this year that was not anticipated last year when we put the budget forward of $45,000. And then there's two corrections to language items from last year that just address the scope to ensure that the collection of federal receipts authorized in those language items can be used for the right activity in the Department of Education. In the Department of Environmental Conservation, there's $175,000 in program receipts for permit collections. So the department has seen an increase in permit activities as a result of the infrastructure bill. This authority will allow them to collect the fees paid by the permitted entity. We also have $2.8 million in a capitalization for the Clean Air Protection Fund. So the Clean Air Protection Fund, or CAPF as it sometimes is called, is a fund that collects fees from industry as they engage in permitting activity. Those fees during COVID were held flat for 3 years. Normally, the fees are addressed on a rolling basis. During the COVID pandemic, there's a policy decision to hold fees on industry flat As a result, the division had to drain through some of the reserve funding. This $2.8 million makes them whole for that, you know, drain on reserve funding that occurred during the COVID pandemic. In Family and Community Services, there's a rate change related to a bill passed, I believe, 2 years ago by the legislature addressing Alaska Pioneer Home rates. That bill mandates that the department adjust its rates on an annual basis. The $700,000 in program receipts is to collect that additional rate set forth in that bill. It just was missed during the appropriation process last year. In the Department of Fish and Game, some members of the committee may recall that last year in the appropriation bill was what was called a fuel trigger, which would have given appropriation to state agencies to pay for the cost of heating fuel and fuel for vessels and cars based on the price of oil. That was vetoed. The reason for that veto was not necessarily that we did not believe that that need existed, but that that fuel trigger had, you know, very direct strings in terms of where that money would be distributed. And so at the time, we knew that some of those fuel costs wouldn't be distributed the same way that that fuel trigger, you know, was set up in the appropriation bill. And so the veto of that item was because we knew as we would see the fuel costs come into state agencies, they would be distributed a little bit differently than what's distributed in the bill. Here you see the cost of utilities, which primarily is fuel for the Department of Fish and Game, as it's impacted some of their hatcheries, as well as some of their operational expenditures in their regions, which do consume a fair amount of fuel for transportation in their boats or for heating fuel in some of their facilities. We also have an issue related to deferred maintenance in the Southeast region in fisheries management, requiring $137 greater than they had anticipated. In the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, there is an adjustment from program receipts to general fund due to a shortfall in receipts at the Alaska Vocational Technical Institute. They've seen a shortfall in the receipt collections. This ensures they don't have to lay off any of the professors associated with providing those services to the students. They also are looking to slightly change the scope of an appropriation from last year related to workforce development and ensure that can be better deployed. And there is $220,000 related to a claim against the Workers' Comp Benefit Guarantee Fund. The Workers' Comp Benefit Guarantee Fund was swept in the CBR sweep a number of years ago, and so it doesn't have the funds in it to pay for this claim. And so this supplemental will address that need. In the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, they have the need for a data processing manager to work through IT systems issues that have arisen during the course of this fiscal year. They have brought on a new position in order to deal with the issues, but require funding to pay for that position. There's also a shortfall at JBEAR, $1 million in unrestricted general fund related to operating costs for the Army Guard. There's also an additional $1.9 million in federal receipts to the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs related to benefit costs that the federal government is willing to pay out to members of the Guard. And then I'll apologize, these bottom three items are actually part of the Department of Natural Resources, not Military and Veterans Affairs. The header just was missed here. Much like Department of Environmental Conservation, DNR is seeing an increase in the number of permit applications related to the infrastructure bill. It requires $200,000 in program receipts to collect the fees for those permits. We spoke already about the $50 million in fire activity general fund authorization. And then also there's about $100,000 issue in the state parks. We have an item in the FY24 budget also associated with this same issue in trying to keep parks open and ensure that we have enough money in the parks division to ensure that concessionaires are able to operate the parks, or if not, that we have the ability to bring on state employees to do that same body of work.
We have a question from Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Steininger, my question is about the capitalization of the Workers' Compensation Benefits Guarantee Fund, which you said was needed because we swept that fund. My recollection is that fund had previously been accrued over multiple years. So my question is this $221,000 to capitalize it for anticipated claims for 1 year, or are we recapitalizing it to pay for multiple years, or anticipating that it may be swept again, or?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, the $221,400 is associated with a specific claim. So that's not the total amount that was swept from the fund. It's being capitalized with that amount in order to ensure that they're able to pay that specific claim, but not capitalized with any additional receipts because the fund is still subject to the sweep. So kind of a decision was made to capitalize the amount necessary to pay the claims. If further claims come in, we may have to look at how to address those claims if there's not enough revenue into the fund in the intervening time.
Follow-up, Representative Hammond.
This is a supplemental, so my question is, through the chair, are we baking in some money to continue to pay for the next fiscal year, or are we keeping it only at the amount that comes out of regular workers' compensation that, is it a 0.5% or something that goes to the workers' compensation fund to pay them? Or are $221,000 for a specific claim, supplemental, great, we got to pay it, we owe it. But do we anticipate that every year we're going to have a supplemental if we've got a major claim? Or are we capitalizing it by that regular contributions coming out of workers' compensation that's coming out of people's paychecks so that we anticipated it being there to pay the claims on an annual basis?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, we are continuing to capitalize with the payroll contributions that are being made by the employers into the fund. And so ideally, should there not be another large claim like this, the fund will continue to build up and ideally not be swept. We've included the reverse sweep in our appropriation bill this year. So ideally, that fund is able to build up again over time and be self-supporting to manage any future claims. But should there be a future claim that is in excess of the amount in the fund in a future year, we may have to come to the legislature.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On slide 10 in the Department of Revenue, in the Juneau State Office Building, the Department of Revenue is working to build a cash box to handle cash tax payments for marijuana businesses. The department was assessing their operations and the amount of cash coming in under marijuana legalization and found that they had significantly more cash than they felt comfortable handling within the security of the existing facilities. So the department has started construction of that cash room. They were able to find a little over half of the cost by kind of moving costs around within their existing budget, but require another $150,000 to complete that construction and ensure that amount of cash is kept secure. The tax revenue management system is the...
Just a question on the cash room. Can the cash from the marijuana taxes be used, or is it be used to designate funds, or is there any designated funds, or can that be, or do they have to be UGF funds?
Chair Johnson, the marijuana taxes go to three places. So you have the Marijuana Education and Treatment Fund, or MET. There's the Recidivism Reduction Fund, and then the remainder goes into the Unrestricted General Fund. So MET and Recidivism Reduction are designated funds and are pretty much fully consumed by the departments using them.
Thank you.
So the tax revenue management system is the IT system that runs all of our tax systems in the state. It's being shifted into the cloud. that cloud shift does have a cost associated with it and an increase in the cost of the licensing for the system. In fiscal year 23, that's $187,000. That wasn't accommodated in their existing budget and can't actually be spent out of the greater cloud migration appropriation. Another two items related to fiscal notes that got omitted at the close of last session. For those that were here last session, recall things moved fairly fast at the end of the year, and there were quite a few fiscal notes that were not included in that final packet at the conference committee. In this case, it's for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, the impacts of HB 226. You see two rows here. One is for the main corporation. The other is for one of their subsidiary corporations. And then we also have $127 million in federal stimulus for housing. This is federal money coming in used by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to manage some of the programs that they have. In the Department of Transportation, there's advanced air mobility infrastructure. This is coming out of the International Airport Fund and the Rural Airport Fund to fund a study on air mobility infrastructure. There are also a number of technical items in the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, just correcting fund changes from a fiscal note, again, that was not updated at the very end of session last year. In the state equipment fleet, the state equipment fleet is the purchaser of fuel for most state vehicles. So most state employees that drive a state vehicle, when they purchase fuel, they use a state card that then charges to the state equipment fleet, who then bills back the agency based on that usage. This $2 million is receipt authority to accommodate those additional payments for the fuel costs coming from other agencies as they've seen an increase in fuel. Also in the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, there are increases in the service contracts for the Nutak and Matarvik airports of $290,000. These are state-owned airports and are maintained by individuals in the communities. The cost of those contracts have gone up as a result primarily of the cost of fuel. In the city of Homer, the gas and water sewer assessments from the city of Homer on DOT facilities were increased several years ago, and the department has some back pay that they need to pay for the full cost of those assessments in a total of $180,000. In the city of Fairbanks, the department has been working with the city to maintain some of the DOT-owned roads through a contract. This contract has a cost of $200,000 over the amount that normally is budgeted for road maintenance or plowing in the city of Fairbanks. Also in the South Coast region at the rural airport or airports in South Coast, there's a $49,000 increase, very similar to the Nutak Matarvik airport contract issue, where the individuals performing the maintenance have seen cost increases. Again, in the King Salmon Airport, this is a maintenance agreement cost increase that's actually covered by the federal government in this case, so luckily not state dollars, but $775,000 increase to that cost. In the international airports, you can see there's several items here. The next four are all costs that the international airports has identified that can't be fit within their existing budget for supplies, advertising, material shipping, and snow removal.
Madam Chair.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Steininger, on the second to the last item, did the department seek supplemental monies for Anchorage's snow disaster, for lack of a better word?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the department didn't specifically seek supplemental monies for the non-airport related portions. The airport portions here, you can see that they have had had to deal with that same issue. That's obviously a fairly critical need for the airport. The department was able to allocate resources within their existing budget in the Anchorage region to address the state-owned roads that they were plowing.
Follow up, Representative Josephson.
So and of course the Anchorage delegation will probably agree with me, about what would happen is the municipality, which had its own struggles, would have a part of a street up to some cross street. For example, I think on Fireweed Lane this happened. They would stop their more timely maintenance, and then cars simply couldn't advance into the state portion of a shared street. So we have a lot of upset constituents, I mean, it's an item I think that we need to look at in the budget overall, and I may call you about the proper component where that might be placed. But I'm a little surprised. I don't doubt what you said, but I'm surprised by it that the department didn't ask for a life buoy and more support in November and December. I would have thought they would have done that. Thanks.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through Chair Johnson. Mr. Steininger, I just wanted to recollect, because I'm flipping to the detail, but my recollection is the International Airport, Anchorage and Fairbanks, and I can't remember the term they use, but they self-fund the fees charged. So although they're in the supplemental, these are in revenue that will be generated back to the state from the users and fees for those operations. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, yes. So just for by way of explanation on the slide here, you can see that, for example, this bottom one, 138.6 international airport funds. So that represents the collections from the air carriers at the airport that pay in. So that is entirely self-supported. Yes.
Follow-up,
Representative.
So just to confirm, we're just authorizing the billing and receipt of monies that the vendors and users are going to end up paying. It's not coming out of other state revenue sources.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, that's correct. As a state entity, they require appropriation from this body.
Thank you.
All right, moving along.
Right. The next, let's see, all items on this sheet actually are all, again, international airport items where they've identified individual costs that can't be accommodated in their existing budget. Couple of things to highlight here, you know, we have heating fuel and then mission critical incentive pay at the international airport facilities. This was to ensure they were able to get some of those ground crews and plow drivers in order to keep the airports open through this winter.
All right. We have a question from Representative Foster, Co-Chair Foster. Excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't see the Marine Highway System in the supplemental here. And is there a reason for that? And do you foresee any amendments coming down the road later?
Through the Chair, Representative Foster. So the Marine Highway System, currently we're working with the department to determine whether they'll need a supplemental budget adjustment or if they'll simply need an adjustment in the future year budget. In the fiscal year 23 budget, really the calendar year 23 budget, as the Marine Highway is kind of on an offset budget schedule from the rest of the state, they do have a $20 million contingent appropriation should the federal receipts be insufficient or come in insufficient to meet the appropriation. So we're working with them to see if that $20 million, you know, if that contingency is met, is that $20 million is sufficient for operations? And if it is not, as we look at the different ways to match the additional capital funds, you know, I anticipate that we'll be coming forward with kind of that as one entire package.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, on slide 13, in the University of Alaska, the university, after the close of session, negotiated compensation increases with its staff and faculty. The cost of that in fiscal year 23 is $6.5 million. There are also appropriations proposed in the fiscal year 24 budget for that year's costs in that contract.
Questions?
Representative Josephson and Representative Galvin.
To the chair, Mr. Steininger, I'm very happy to see this top item. If you know, it's not meant to be a quiz, There's either a provision in law or in the Constitution about the university having responsibility over compensating its own employees. In other words, the legislative role in House Bill 226, we saw a boost in pay for exempt and partially exempt. My understanding is to do something akin to that for the university staff is trickier. The role isn't as direct for the legislature. Do you understand that process?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I'll speak very high level, and I'm not sure if there's a representative of the university online that knows the specifics more. The university has some covered employees, which is what this is addressing, is the covered staff and faculty, and then they have some exempt employees. But you're right in that they were not part of HB 226, as you know, in the statutory definition, they are defined a little bit differently than a normal state employee. And I'll stop there before I, you know, a little bit out of my depth specifically on the university's staff issues. Yeah.
We have Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, I'm looking at page 9, and I just wondered, this may be a question for the university, but I see that under University of Alaska, it's just for faculty and staff that you have a supplemental, but you had mentioned for the existing vocational training opportunities that this number was due to a shortfall in student receipts. So presumably there would have been a lack of students for this particular facility, and I'm wondering if the university didn't have the same sort of ask given the change of student population there as well.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, the student receipts on slide 9 are associated mm-hmm. with the Alaska Vocational Technical Education Center, which yes. is run by the Department of Labor, so separate from the university
right.
system.
Right, yes.
The university certainly has its own kind of challenges with attracting students and, mm-hmm. and all of that, and I would let the university speak to that more directly.
Okay.
But doesn't necessarily have the same budget considerations as AFTEC does, just a slightly different operational structure.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
And then finishing off slide 13, in the legislature, there's supplemental related to health insurance rate increases that was omitted from the fiscal year 23 budget. An increase in program receipts for the collection of building revenue at the assembly building, as well as a increase of the attorney salary increases under HB 226 that was simply omitted from that fiscal note at the end of session last year. On slide 14, we're moving into capital budget items. In the Department of Administration, there's a surplus property program where federal receipts come in for the sale of federal property administered by the Department of Administration. We can use those federal receipts for certain types of activities. In this case, they're looking to add a bit of office space and renovate a storage mezzanine in the warehouse where we store that federal property. So it's receipts from the sale of federal property to support our activity in managing that. In the Department of Commerce, in the Alaska Energy Authority, we have a Defense Community Infrastructure Pilot Program. This came in through the Infrastructure Act. It's about $13 million in federal receipts. And then a State Energy Program formula grant from the infrastructure bill at the federal level, coming in just shy of $3 million in federal receipts. The department also has a grants management system that they are looking to replace portions of to supplement their ability to manage the named recipient grants that the department manages on behalf of the state. In the Department of Fish and Game, we have a number of projects. This and then on the following slide for the Exxon Valdez oil spill. I'm forgetting the rest of the name of the organization, but they manage the Exxon Valdez oil spill settlement monies, and then they make recommendations for projects that those monies get paid out to. You can see here the first two is ocean monitoring program as well as a mariculture development program. Then on slide 15 are the rest of these EVOS projects, you know, including mariculture opportunities, community restoration, natural history symposium, a funding for a camp, habitat protection, a stream watch program, as well as an injured seabirds program. Again, this comes from that council. That is a council of several state representatives as well as federal representatives that dictate the way that that money is spent. However, it does get appropriated through state appropriation vehicles. In the Department of Natural Resources, there's a $5 million federal program related to LIDAR data collection as a recent award from the federal government. On slide 16, we have a number of federal awards and the associated match in the Aviation Improvement Program. So these are above and beyond what initially was appropriated for Aviation Improvement Program. It's effectively additional FAA dollars that the state is able to collect so long as we're able to provide the match. The match is $1.7 million, and the programs are listed here throughout the state. In the University of Alaska, there's a $4 million federal program related to workforce expansion and diversity funding at UAA. And then also throughout the university, they're requesting $30 million in university receipts to address a variety of capital projects, maintenance and work on some of their buildings, as well as some renovations. Similarly, $30 million in federal receipts for effectively the same purpose.
What exactly is UA Health Workforce Expansion and Diversity Funding?
Through the chair, or Chair Johnson, I'm not sure if we possibly have Chad Hutchinson on the line from the university, or maybe Alicia Kruckenberg. I'm not sure if they're available or not. They might be able to give a little more detail on what's on the UA program. If not, I'll bring you additional information in writing.
Okay, thank you.
And on slide 17, the final slide, there are a number of technical items. So we have a couple of capital projects that were appropriated to one agency, but as we've been managing the project, we think it's more appropriate for it to be managed under a separate agency. The first is the IT system modernization for our retirement systems. Back in, I believe it was fiscal year 18, that was appropriated to the Office of the Governor, but really the manager of that program is the Department of Administration, Division of Retirement and Benefits. We also have a number of projects associated with, previously with Health and Social Services, that need to be appropriated to the appropriate agency post-split. We were able to address most of those projects last year, but there are a couple that are left over that need to be redirected to the appropriate agency. And then the final item is a repeal of a IT project at the Permanent Fund Dividend Division within Department of Revenue. They completed that project on time and under budget. This repeals the remaining funding, allowing it to lapse back into the dividend fund.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Director Steininger. In my time here, I've sometimes seen supplemental budgets passed in the first 30 days and sometimes definitely not, and rolled into other budgets. And I've been struck by, if they're signed by the governor early June, then to the extent there's some urgency, we missed the urgency. I would welcome you, if you want, to make a case as to why this should be moved along swiftly, or is the administration indifferent about how it's disposed of in terms of the timeline?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I definitely always would encourage prompter action on a supplemental budget, given that these items are needs because they are things we can't accommodate within the existing budget that are truly needs that need to be performed. Some of them, are are situations where, you know, on a capital budget item, you know, you have a longer time period to act on that. So if it gets appropriated today, that's much better. It allows us to start working on that federal grant or what have you immediately. If it's appropriated on June 30th, you know, they just start that capital project on that date. In other cases, however, you know, thinking about like the appropriations for the Department of Public Safety, you know, those are, you know, there are real true needs there that if not appropriated timely, you know, just increase the accounting challenges for the back end staff and the administrative staff in the department in order to make sure that they're, that the lack of an appropriation doesn't cause, you know, operational challenges for the troopers. So every supplemental appropriation has a slightly different, you know, need or urgency. You know, the ones up here on the slide here today, if we, you know, don't transfer that IT system project to the Department of Administration until June 30th, it's not really going to impact operations. It's more of a technical matter. But, you know, there definitely are situations, the Department of Corrections, Department of Public Safety, that, you know, really could cause operational challenges through delay. We do, though, that said, as you noted, supplemental budgets in my time as the director at OMB, aside from the 1 year under COVID, I think we've seen them all pass in about June. And so we work with the agencies that are impacted to ensure that we minimize the impact to that direct service work. We would prefer we not have to, though. Thank you.
Co-Chair Edgman.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Well, if we did fund this right now, it would require a CBR draw, right? A three-quarters vote.
Through the Chair, Representative Edgman, based on current revenue projections, it would not. Based on current revenue projections, there would be $29 million remaining of FY23 revenue. So it doesn't take it into a deficit for FY23 under current projections.
That's sort of interesting to me because I think I heard you mention that oil would have to be $82 a barrel to balance the budget. Did I hear that right at the outset for FY23? And the numbers we got previously were a projected $88 a barrel. But what you're saying right now is that oil prices are somewhere between 82 and 88. Is that what I'm inferring?
Chair Edgman, so current oil price is a little bit lower than that $82, but that's the amount it needs to average for the remainder of the fiscal year. So when we have an update to revenue and official forecast in the spring, so sometime mid to late March, we'll have to reassess what the surplus or deficit for 23 is and determine whether another source needs to be gone to in order to meet the appropriation need.
And then just to, if I could, to the co-chair, just have this clear in my mind, I think it's a pretty obvious response. The governor's FY24 budget, if we adopted it every period, every comma didn't change anything, the CBR draw would be, what, $265 million? Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, yeah, roughly $265 million. Yes.
And that again, through the chair, is based on where things stand with oil because the spring oil forecast could deviate. But it's just interesting, I guess, as a quick commentary, how things can change quickly with oil prices and $105 million in a supplemental budget request, which, you know, I don't know what the historic average is, but I remember 1 year not too long ago, maybe a decade ago, we had a $16 million supplemental, and that's because we didn't have a lot of, like, tundra fires on state land and things that we've experienced this last year. Really appreciate the presentation, Madam Co-Chair, and thank you for allowing me to keep my streak intact of at least asking one question.
Thank you. So is that on the fire suppression? Are you anticipating additional fire suppression requests?
Chair Johnson, we're working with the department on what they're projecting for the spring and looking to see on the fall fires as we get a better idea of what land that those actually burned on, whether there will be federal reimbursement for that, to determine whether the $50 million can cover the entire year or if there might be an additional need. So we'll come back to the committee at a later date with additional information related to fire suppression and the spring projection.
All right, thank you. Is there any additional questions? Oh, I'm sorry. Co-Chair Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Got two questions, if that's okay. Mr. Steininger, maybe if you could get us more detailed information with regard to the size of past supplementals, but just shoot from the hip right now. At $105 million for UGF, is this supplemental about average, a little bit bigger than normal, a little smaller than the last, say, 4 years?
Chair Foster, in terms of supplemental needs outside of fire, so say taking the $50 million out, we've definitely had years with significantly larger supplementals, particularly in years where Medicaid was short-funded. But I would say this is kind of in the high side of the middle range, I guess. I mean, just kind of shooting from the hip, but we can provide you with a report of the last 10 years of supplementals.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, second question?
Certainly.
Thank you. Just overall, not just fire suppression, but just overall, do you expect amendments to come in? I don't know if you're in discussions right now with the various departments, and there's some things that may be on the horizon that you might be able to speak to. Are we looking at possibility of seeing amendments in the range of a couple hundred thousand, a few million, tens of millions? Is there anything that you can speak to regarding that?
Chair Foster, I don't know that I could put a number to it. We are working with the agencies right now on the amended budget process. And, you know, as you can see, you know, the supplementals in Department of Corrections and things like that, you know, looking at how is that going to impact the fiscal year 24 budget. Our amendments will come out on February 15th is a date that we'll be submitting our main amendment package.
Thank you.
All right. Seeing no further questions, our next meeting is, thank you, Director Steininger. Our next meeting is scheduled for Monday, February 6th at 1:30 p.m. We will receive a presentation from Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority presented by Steve Williams, the Chief Executive Officer, and Anita Halterman, the Chair of the Board of Trustees. So with no further business before the committee, we are adjourned at 2:46 p.m.